Weekly, brought to you by Barfoot & Thompson. On the show today, we're talking West Auckland real estate, property management, sales, investing, and even a career opportunity. Welcome to Barfoot & Thompson's Property Matters. Welcome along to another Monday. Kids back at school today, so you might be sitting in traffic listening to me. Sorry about that, but you know, better places you can be than listening to me. Welcome to Dan and Tony, who are here today from Barfoot & Thompson's Te Aritu branch to chat all things real estate in West Auckland. Welcome along, gentlemen.
Thanks, Stephen. Thanks for having us.
Great to have you here, and you've both been on the show in different times before, but never together in the studio, so great to have you here. Tony, we'll kick it off with you before we sort of talk the important stuff. Let's just chat a little bit about your journey in real estate. Have you always been in real estate?
No, not at all. In fact, I came into this profession, I guess, as a bit more of a mature aged agent. So I was in my mid-40s when I transitioned into real estate. I think, and I could be wrong, but I haven't come across another ex-firefighter that's moved into the real estate profession. So
challenge for our listeners.
Well, certainly not around our company anyway. There's bound to be somewhere across the whole industry. But 24 years as a career firefighter, professional paid firefighter.
So what made you suddenly go, all right, I'm putting down the hose and picking up a for sale sign?
Yeah, good question. I think everyone reaches a point in a longer career, as I say, I was approaching 25 years, to think, is this for me for the rest of my working life, you know, until retirement age, or do I want to try something completely different and re-challenge myself? So that question started surfacing a bit more regularly. I thought, nah, I think I've got that curiosity. I'm going to go and try something that requires me to completely retrain myself and re-challenge myself. So,
do you miss any parts of that?
I love the camaraderie that we had in that. It's a very, very special career. The work life there is unlike anywhere else in terms of that team bond that you form with your crew and with your colleagues through having been in very stressful sort of situations together. And then when you're back on station, you are almost like a family away from your family. So it's a very unique work environment, and nice. I do miss that for sure. Yeah.
Do you go into properties now and immediately look at smoke alarms first? When everyone else is checking out the rest of the house, you're like, smoke alarm needed there.
Well, it is one of the things I would notice. Look, I found over the years just been able to give really good advice. I created a website for myself and used to put blog posts up there to, you know, sort of help educate people. And one of my obvious areas of expertise was around fire safety in the home. So that was a really cool added value thing I was able to provide to my clients. And I also think people felt confident working with me. I don't know, there's an inherent trust, I think, because of that whole reputation of the trustworthiness of, you know, people working in the emergency services. And I was very lucky to bring that with me into my new career, because let's be honest, real estate agents are probably, am I allowed to say, one step above used car salesmen? Sorry, all you used car salesmen out there, not meaning to be rude, but, you know, there isn't a natural, I think, trust that's organic with real estate. So that brought a lot of, that helped me a lot when I was starting out, for sure.
So you left the fire department, went into sales. When did managing a branch kick in?
Worked in the sales side of the business for 8.5 years and approximately a year and a half ago. So I've just had my 10-year anniversary with the company, just in February, March. And so for the past 18 months, I've been the branch manager at the Te Aritu branch in Te Aritu Peninsula.
And what's that sort of learning curve been like?
Oh, huge. Oh my gosh, we've only got 45 minutes to talk. Look, the analogy I'd give one of our sort of leadership people in our support centre described it to me. I think it was about the week before I was due to start at the branch, and he said, Tony, if I can give you a bit of advice, you're going to, for the next wee while, you're going to feel like you're drinking from a fire hydrant. Interesting analogy, given that I was an ex-firefighter. He said, there is so much that's going to come at you. You can only swallow so much water. The rest of it's just going to wash over you and drown you.
Can't turn the tap off.
So that was pretty prophetic, to be honest. Been a massive, massive learning and development pathway for me. I do feel thankful that before coming to real estate in my last 10 years in the fire service, I was like a senior officer manager. So I had led teams and managed teams and, you know, had to have that position of, you know, sort of running the business, if you like, even though it's a completely different style of business. So that wasn't foreign to me, but bigger business when you're running a real estate office and all the different dynamics of property management versus sales versus admin, you know, there's a lot of different facets to it. But I'm up for a challenge, otherwise I wouldn't have gone for the job. And it's been an incredible learning pathway for me and I'm loving it.
Brilliant. All right, Dan, over to you. Did your career start with a fire hose? I have to be careful what I say here. Were you putting out fires anywhere in the world?
No. Very, very different. It was more sequencing glitter, to be fair. Started my career in the UK in 2016 after having a very extensive career in the professional performing arts industry, and decided it was time to settle down and get a real job and not work nights. So I then basically moved to real estate in the UK, where I sold in the southwest of London, which is Clapham, Battersea, where the new Battersea Power Station is, which they've just developed. And then moved to lettings, which they call lettings over there, not rentals, or property management. And then moved to the coaching development team, where I was more on the apprenticeship side and bringing in the junior estate agency apprenticeship that the UK deliver now. And then decided that, well, I met a partner and decided to move to the other side of the world. And then continued my career and been at TL2 ever since. So I've been here 4 years.
Had you been to New Zealand before moving here?
Oh, absolutely not. Never been on the radar at all.
Wow.
I just thought one day I'm coming, and applied for the visa, jumped on the plane in February and landed here and I've not left.
Brilliant. What's some of the differences between property management in New Zealand and UK when it comes to sort of rules, regulations, etc.?
Definitely the legislation in terms of vacating tenants and landlords getting out of, you know, tenancies. Certainly very, very different.
There's a lot harder here or harder there?
Depending. I think it's harder in the UK if there is a significant problem in the property. But I would say it's most probably easier if the landlord changed its mind and didn't want it on the property ladder. Didn't want their property, in the lettings market. So yeah, that was pretty. So it's a lot of similarities, but a lot of differences. Also, as well, like the length of tenancies. So here we would, you know, notoriously do a 12-month fixed term and then look at a periodic or roll it onto another fixed term. But in the UK, the longer the tenancy, the better rent you're going to get. So you would negotiate it for like a 24 to 36-month lease, and then there would be clauses in there for a landlord-only or a tenant-only rate lease. So, there was a lot more of a longer period of rentals. It was certainly a big shift in the mindset, because here we do everything from the start to finish and continue to manage the properties throughout the tenancy. In the UK, you would only really find the properties, find the tenants, move them in, and then move it into a different department and let them run if it was a managed service.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. So you're both West Auckland based, looking after that West Auckland investment market. Talk to us about West Auckland as a good investment space for landlords.
We both probably got a view on that.
Yeah.
Look, I see West Auckland as being sort of the emerging quarter of, if you think of, you know, Auckland being north, south, east, west. For years and years, it felt like all of the expansion and the exciting stuff was happening through Albany and north and East Auckland, with all Botany and all those areas, and that's where all the growth was. And West Auckland seemed to just kind of be sitting the quiet old suburbs, not much in the way of expansion. And then now we've seen in the northwest area, you know, it's like it's really woken up. We've got the excitement of the northwest shopping centre. We've got great, you know, ferry services to the CBD running out of it from multiple locations. On top of the comfort of having those really well-established schools and community services that have been there for decades and decades. So it's certainly become a really popular area for investor buyers. There's strong rental demand there. Unless there's a real problem with a property, we certainly don't have vacant properties for long. We normally have people lining up to get in there. Dan can comment more on that. And also I think if the location, particularly where we are, if you can't afford to be in one of those real city central, city fringe suburbs, if you think about the Te Arawa area, for example, we are literally the first suburb once you come over the causeway from the city, you arrive at Te Arawa. So location-wise, it's great for people commuting to the central areas, and yet it's also very easy to head north now to get to Albany and the North Shore, or if you're just wanting to get out of Auckland and get on that northern corridor, it's just become so much easier with the completion of the Western Ring Route and the access to the North Shore and stuff. So, look, we certainly have a lot of confidence from investor buyers buying into the area. Like I say, with all that Northwest development, we've got more local employment out there as well. So those are all real positives.
Yeah, good points. Anything you'd add to that, Dan?
Yeah, I think... you know, it's far more attractive now than when I joined it, I think, in 4 years ago. Like Tony said, on the Northwest Shopping Centre, I think Costco's is bought massive, a massive pull to the community at that end. Costco's brings it from all over nationally, but I think, it's a lot more affordable for families now to cater food, when you've got a tight economy in cash flow. But I think the community, in particularly Auckland Council have put the new, bus routes in, and that's really, the hub of it from the top of Te Arawa, in between Te Arawa South and Te Arawa Peninsula, which now makes the commute far more easier to get into the city, for work. I think there's got more, a lot more walks, I think, in especially, what the last 2 years we've had, where people have had to enjoy their own communities and not been able to get out of their communities. I think people's realised that actually the area is certainly got more green than it looks.
I think we all did that, didn't we? We discovered things on our doorstep we didn't know were there.
The coastal walkway there is amazing, and effectively it is on a peninsula of land projecting out into the harbour with magnificent harbour and city views. Again, speaking quite locally, Te Arawa rather than West Auckland more generally, So it's a wonderful location. The cafe scene's become more vibrant. It's just really transformed. Yeah. I was born in Te Arawa South, so we're at the shops, where I'm positioned now. Used to drive through there every Sunday with my mum and sisters and brother, going to church and what was Te Arawa North back then. It wasn't called Te Arawa Peninsula back in those days. So I've seen the area develop from what it was when the motorway ended there. You couldn't even drive to Lincoln Road. The motorway didn't extend beyond Te Arawa to where it is now. It's amazing to see how much the area has progressed.
So what's the West Auckland sales market looking like at the moment?
I think, I wouldn't say that the West Auckland sales market is any different than Auckland. My commentary would be more the residential scene in Auckland. And even then, you look around the country and it's very similar around areas of the country where it's a little bit challenging if you're selling, let's be honest. It's not that we're not selling properties, because I knew you were going to ask me that, Stephen. I looked up a few stats before I came in. I know your listeners don't jump on this to listen to stats, so I won't get too boring with it. But we sold a lot of property in March, just our Buffett and Thompson alone. Over 1,000 properties sold in the month of March. And you would think, oh, that sounds pretty active, and it is. We haven't sold that many properties in a month in 1 month for more than 3 years. But there's been a real surge in listings, so we've got a lot of available property. So that same month where we sold over 1,000 properties, we listed 1,900. So in net, our total stock, we ended up carrying sort of 900 more properties by April than we had at the month prior. So that's the biggest influence for anyone who's done economics at school. It's just a straight supply-demand question, and we just have a lot of supply now. Even though we've got steady demand, we've just got a lot more property available.
All right. So as someone experienced in the sales journey, not just as your branch manager role now, with your sales hat on, what tips do you have for people selling their homes?
Nothing changes in terms of the importance of property preparation and investing in good marketing and, you know, making sure you're engaged with an excellent agent, because that's relevant regardless of the state of the market. What I would say right now is probably the most important consideration is to engage with an agent, as most people think of them, as a salesperson who's going to be very honest up front about the market value given the more challenging market conditions, and do a really robust appraisal process. So establishing that price expectation at the start is critically important at the moment. It's a very price sensitive market because buyers are so aware they've got a lot of choice. You only have to be 5% off in your sort of selling expectation, and you'll notice that all the other houses are selling and not your one. So if I could give one bit of advice, it'd be really establishing a realistic expectation at the outset, so you're meeting the market where people are ready to buy your home. The properties predominantly that are sticking are the ones where I believe the owners are still hopeful of that premium, and it's a little bit tricky to get a premium with that much choice out there at the moment.
If someone came into your branch looking to sell, do you try and sort of listen and then match the best agent to
Absolutely.
Suit sort of their suburb, their area?
100%.
Matchup obviously sounds quite important.
Yeah, look, I'll often be the first recipient of a call or an email from someone saying, hey, you know, we're considering selling, rather than just passing that email or that phone call on to anyone. One of the things I always do is ring that person, have a chat with them, or have my pen and paper ready. What's their situation? What has their past experience been like in selling? What's their demographic, you know? And if I can sense that person's overall situation, I feel like I've got a much better opportunity to I know exactly who on my team would just be so perfect for their situation, and then it's a win-win for everybody.
Now, at the start of that question about top tips for selling, you said make sure your property is well prepared. What do you mean by that? Let's just unpack that for a second.
Well, again, look, if I can go back to the fact that there's a lot of property on the market, there's a lot of choice for a buyer. If your competitor's properties are beautifully, all the landscaping's been up to date, the maintenance, the cleaning, the presentation, even staging. Some people might move old furniture out and get staging furniture in to make it photograph and present better. If your competitors, if you think of other sellers as your competition for those same buyer pool, are going to all that effort, and a seller chooses just to come on the market and say, oh, this place will sell itself, you know, and not really put much effort in, then don't expect to capture the audience. You know, you have to think, we need our property to stand out in lights. And that comes right through from videos and photography through to people's actual impression when they come to the open home or the viewing and are walking around. You need to sell your property as the one that those buyers want to buy. If you don't put any effort into preparation and presentation, it makes it a lot tougher for the agent representing you to get that deal done for you.
For the open homers, it's still, you know, the bread in the oven, the coffee on the board, as those things do. Does smell make a difference?
A bad smell does.
Yeah. Okay.
I would say what's more important is, and it's certainly, I used to school my vendors up, you know, before I get there, have opened the whole house up. Fresh air is as important as it is, you know, the smell of bread cooking. And I used to always like to have music on to make the place feel it's like it's got a bit of personality.
Yeah.
So I would just bring my Bluetooth speaker along. I had my open home playlist, you know, that I would put on, which was just nice and pleasant. And it just made it a bit nicer for people walking around. But no, I never gave any instructions about putting the coffee, the coffee brewing or anything, but just definitely open everything up. Perhaps through the winter months when things are a bit sort of colder and a little bit, you just want to get that fresh burst of air through. Yeah,
absolutely. So Dan, switching that from sales to rental, if an investor is looking at purchasing a property in West Auckland, what sort of things should they be looking for if it's going to be a good rental property?
I think first things first is looking at where it's situated for school catchment areas. I think that's a big thing. Us, in particularly, since we had, you know, I won't mention the C word, you know, but we know that the last two tough years, a lot of people moved from places where it was no outside space to outside space. Right. And so there's a lot of families that are now out there looking or, you know, relocating. So definitely it's the area, it's where it's positioned, you know, like in the peninsula or in Seattle to South. But I think another big, big factor, and it really is off-street parking. They need to do that. And, you know, I always say when I go out onto these properties to see these, you know, to see, speak to landlords and in on appraisals, I always say as well, you know, you've got to look at the pet situation. And I know now that we've got a great new legislation that's going to hopefully be passed off shortly with the new pet bonds and things. You know, you look at the market, 95% of the market nowadays have got a pet. 5% haven't.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, almost the same as selling to rentals here, is that, you know, you've got to look at, you know, who you're marketing your property to, and are you prepared to wait 6 weeks for it to be rented, or do you need that money now to have it? And it's the same with sales, right? If, you know, they're not marketing the property in the correct way, are you prepared to have it on there for 6 months, you know, or are you wanting it to be gone after your 3 week marketing campaign and it's sold at an auction? And I think it's the same, it's very similar. And some people buy into it, some people don't, and you know, in it, but it's about educating them along the way, in making sure that we as the professionals actually give the right information to landlords and put them at ease as well.
Certainly when I was a property manager many years ago, people with pets were my best tenants. I mean, they actually looked after the property so well because they knew how difficult it was to get another place. I never experienced an issue. Tony mentioned, you know, decluttering and staging your home. If a landlord's renting a property out for the first time, often these properties are empty. Do you look at staging? Is that something, or is it not needed? A tenant can sort of come in and visualise it.
Again, I think it's on the type of property. I think, you know, your standard three-bedroom houses, two bedrooms, absolutely, you know, we don't need to stage it. If we think, which we have done in the past, if we think that the property looks quite difficult or looks small, on the smaller side, we'll absolutely speak to our photographer to try and put, like, some furniture in the photos.
Right.
So they're
more
able
of a
to
digital
it.
Stage
yeah.
rather than a physical.
Has been a big growth area in the last few years.
Right.
And sometimes people do struggle to look at a picture of an empty room and imagine it, you know, and they might imagine that it's small, but if you can actually show couches or a dining table, they can see, oh no, that's a six-seat table that would suit my family if they're looking at renting a property. So virtual staging is a really relatively cost-effective and easy way of creating that look you're looking for in your rental marketing as well.
But I think, you know, when you go to the high-end market of the rental side, in which you do, you know, and, you know, you look at listings nowadays, you know, it's particularly in the areas of your more of your Remueras, in your Ellerslie areas, there is a lot of more high-end stuff that's coming on. So that's obviously going to attract a certain clientele or a certain tenant that goes in there, and it's 9 out of 10, it could be an overseas coming over for a very short time to do a bit of a consultation period with one of the big CBD companies. So that recommendation for that, it would be to stage your property.
Furnished or unfurnished out west? Like, I mean, obviously in the city, a lot of the apartments are furnished that you rent. What's your take out west?
There's a lot of families out there. So families, 9 out of 10, will always have their furniture.
Right.
I think, you know, it's a different market again. In the CBD, although you're saying that there's a lot furnished, we've just had one that's just gone, but the it was quite slow because of the furnished.
Right, so it could be a limitation.
Yeah, and I think for me as a property manager, I would always recommend to have it unfurnished because people want their own stuff, you know. I know for myself, I would sleep in my own bed, you know, but not necessarily on another. But going back to the UK and where my career was, that every single property was furnished.
Right.
It was very rare that you had a unfurnished property, and it would always have a bed, it would have a couch, it would have a coffee table, and you would bring all your electronics into the property, and you used to negotiate. So you could negotiate. I remember one of my big deals that I did before I left was he wanted a faux kitchen repaint, wanted a new kitchen fitted, and it was just, the list went on. And I think it was about £15,000 worth of renovations, but he took the property for 4 years.
Right.
So the landlords pay for it.
Yeah,
so over
yeah.
here, we don't really have that. You know, we have those new legislations where tenants can make it their home.
Yeah.
You know, with written permission.
That's still pretty new.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's quite interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah.
If you flick your hat now to a tenant's perspective, so rather than the investor mm-hmm. or the landlord, although this will help them, what advice do you give a tenant who's rocking on up to a viewing? There's loads of other people there. They get their 5-10 minute quick walk through a house and then have to decide, is this where we want to spend the next few years? What should they be looking for?
Look, if it was me as a tenant, and I know certainly that, you know, if I would go out looking to look for a rental, first of all, you know, we have legislation in place to make these houses in New Zealand safe, warm, you know, and for them to comfortably live. And I think, you know, if you're going to a property that's maybe not managed by a property manager, the things you got to look at is like making sure that it's insulated properly, making sure you haven't got no gaps in the windows, and those are your quick things.
And you say not managed by a property manager because, you know, if managed by a property management company, a core part of their role is making sure everything's compliant before
Absolutely.
They will tenant the mm-hmm. property. So there's a safety check instantly there.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's what you need to look at. You need to make sure if those things, because if they are, you know you're going to have a good tenancy. You're going to feel at home, you're going to feel warm, you know, and I think that's the key thing. I think, but if as a tenant coming to view a property, you know, you just got to remember, like, you're almost going to a job interview, because it's just the way that you know it goes, really. Yes, we look at all references and everything like that, but you are going to technically a job interview, because you could have
feeling's going to be, you know, winning immediately.
Yeah, absolutely, because the market is competitive, you know, for tenants. You know, some months is stronger than others. We used to have a bit of a real estate calendar, shall we say. We know what months were going to be really busy and not. No, it's not like that anymore. It's changed. It really has changed. You know, I prepared my team for a heavy February and March like we usually do, but actually it was no different to our November months. So, you know, I think it's just making sure that you're prepared, fully prepared. Applications is a key.
So talk me through that. You know, we're filling out our application. How as a tenant can I help make it be a successful application?
Yeah, look, you know, tenants come into to a property and you're applying, you want this property. We are bound by privacy acts, and we know that we've got to make, there's little clauses and tick boxes in particularly our applications, especially online. Make sure that those boxes are ticked. Make sure that you've included all the information that you need, that we're asking for. It's not because we're being nosy. It's not because we want to share it with anyone. It's because we want to make sure that we've got the best person for that property. So that will delay, because, you know, someone else who, you could have 5 great tenants. Everyone can have the tenants, and we want to put them up to the landlord as quick as we can. But if you've not got a completed application, we can't take it any further. So we've got to send it back to them. Then they got to get it prepared even more. And then you could have, by then, the property would have gone. So it's a case of making sure everything's in place, making sure you're prepared before you get, before you're even going to view a property. You know, no one can reference you. No one can look into your personal finances or anything like that until you've come to see the property. But I always recommend, especially when it's so tight, is to make sure you get it sorted first, get it there, and even just press the send button as soon as you leave that property, sit in the car, send, and then we've got it, because we will then process straight away.
And the Privacy Commissioner brought in a whole lot of rules around what you can and can't ask first up, but a lot of it's optional. Would your advice be, if you can, fill it out in full to save an extra step?
Yeah, absolutely. Because if you were successful with this property, or we had a good feel when we were at the viewing, and you know, and we think that you were best suited to the property, we still need this information, regardless if it's, you know, straight away or halfway through the process, and we need to build a picture for that. We've only seen you for 5 minutes, so just make sure everything's in, because we need to be with this picture to be able to then deliver it to the landlords. One thing we have seen, which has been a massive, massive positive, and it's not required, it's not, we don't say you have to do it, but it has helped. People, as families, have been doing CVs, and particularly one of my colleagues, she had a family that's moved up from the South Island, and she met them once, but they had this incredible CV about their family life, and about how they are, in pictures of their family of being families. And some people could be staged, but 9 out of 10, it's not. It's just general families that want it.
Well, I guess that gives your owner, your landlord, a little bit more of a picture of who's going to be inside their $1 million investment property.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know,
same with pets, photos of pets.
Yeah,
because otherwise, everyone that doesn't like dogs instantly thinks the dog's a pit bull and it's going to maul me when I go and visit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the key thing, is that when they do that information, when they fill out the application form, you know, we're not trying to catch you out because, you know, oh, it's a medium dog. Well, you say it's a small dog, but it's a medium dog. It's not about that. Pets are considered, if any pet is.
Yeah.
But you need to make sure that you put everything on there. And, you know, in it's funny, the pitch of the dogs, if is it registered? All this information is required to build this picture again.
I like that. As a show that you care and you're following those rules too. I used to say that to my applicants and say, no, send me a photo of the dog, because immediately my owner's going to think it's a nasty pit bull. And I remember once the two people in front of me just sort of dropping their body, and then they showed me their photo of their three pit bulls. Like, oh, I walked into that one.
Your comment you made, Stephen, actually was an interesting one, and I picked up on it on another podcast interview that you'd done just recently. I was listening to it about your experience as a property manager and people with pets. How they actually value that property so much more.
If
they've got in there and they've had a landlord that's permitted them to have a pet and given them that trust, how they will want so much to hold on to that property that they may well actually be a far, like almost a superior tenant, if you like, which I never would have thought of until I heard you say that during an interview.
I can't remember ever. And I'm not a pet person myself, so it was always a challenge having to go to properties with dogs. Learnt to like them. But it was always my best tenants, pay on time, house well looked after, great inspections, because they really valued not moving it. Same with, you know, often families with young kids, they don't want to uplift them all the time. So very similar. But yeah, and always fascinated where people say, I'll take a cat, not a dog. A cat can do far more scratching than a dog in some places.
Just talking to someone yesterday who's got her house tenanted and they've got a cat there and it's got some distress syndrome going on. And it's doing a lot of damage, far more than I've heard about with any dogs.
Yeah, so the pet bond rule, that will help in that situation.
Yeah.
But, you know, don't be put off by it. All right, flipping again now, thinking sort of West Auckland and sales. What about advice for someone wanting to become a salesperson? So a couple of weeks ago, we had fabulous three brand new salespeople in here starting their journey out. And, you know, it's a hard market to start a career in. What advice would you have?
It is challenging, you know, I just think having a really realistic view and perception on what you're stepping into before you do is critical. I interview regularly prospects, people that are, say, maybe going through their national certificate training or in the process of receiving their license, and they come and ask to have a sit down and a coffee with me. And I always introduce the chat by saying, look, I'm going to be brutally honest with you, and it's not because I'm wanting to scare you off this profession. I've done it for 10 years and it's been incredible and rewarding and I've loved it. The reality is, though, we have an extremely high attrition rate in this profession. So they reckon after 2 years, about 80% of people that come into real estate sales are no longer in real estate sales. Right. It's a very, very high attrition rate. My personal belief is that a lot of that is around that young professionals are just not prepared for the challenge that's in front of them. So if I could give a little bit of advice, it would be, one, be financially prepared. Now, there might be many listeners out there that don't realise real estate salespeople do not get paid unless they're selling something. There's generally no salaries, no retainers, so it's very much based on transactions, and that's the only time they get paid. So coming into it with a bit of a financial plan of how you're going to navigate through that first 12, 18, 24 months, those that new career phase where regular income may or may not come. I think a lot of people come in just expecting that they're going to be that star, you know, that it's going to be, they're just going to be instantly successful. Perhaps they see successful agents around the area and think, I can do that. That looks easy. All they do is put a nice suit on and smile sweetly at people in an open home and put a flag up and drive a flash car and make all this money. And it, you know, from a romantic perspective, I think the perception from the outside can be quite different to the reality. So I would say just be financially prepared for a bit of a downturn, especially if you've been used coming out of a salary job and you're used to that regularity of fortnightly or monthly pays or whatever it might be. Another big thing, I think, is research your various options. You know, there are, if you're holding a license and you're looking at starting a new career, you don't really want to be jumping from one real estate brand to another. You spend a bit of time establishing your brand presence with whoever that is. There are fundamental differences to way different real estate agencies operate. And I know we're not here to plug Barford and Thompson, but we are fundamentally different to the way our competitors work in the franchise model. So having a really honest conversation with someone who knows what they're talking about in that space, I think is really important. I know for me starting out, that really open network that Barford and Thompson provides with no franchise boundaries was huge for me to be able to just let me do business where I wanted to and where the opportunities took me. And then I think, you know, the last thing is everyone has got a value set that they want to, that they work to, or that's important to them in their workplace. And I would say not every office is the same.
Yeah.
You know, having discussions with a manager and asking,
they need to go out and get the vibe as well.
You've got to, I think, come into an office, a branch environment where the culture, you know, the work environment is in alignment with their values and what they're looking for out of a workplace. Otherwise, they won't feel like they settle in there. So I know for me as the manager of a business that our culture, and I know Dan will attest to this because I go on about it all the time with the team, you know, our culture is critical. I wouldn't want a high performing salesperson in my office but who doesn't fit our ethics, our culture, our team environment. I would rather not have them there and have the rest of the team feeling comfortable and happy and supported and all those sorts of things.
Nice. Look, I've only got a couple of minutes left. Okay. Dan, tell me, if I'm an investor and I don't want an infomercial, I want honesty, why should I bring my investment property to you to manage?
Look, I think you know, the knowledge of our team is far greater than, you know, than what I've ever worked in. To be fair, I've got a great team behind me who is always supportive, we know that for you know, not because I think it, because we, with the feedback that we receive through it. So I think, you know, for that, and with this current day of age of the legislation, with different changes constantly, we've had one of the biggest industries that's had so many legislation changes and had to adapt very quickly because they've been sprung on us overnight. So I think, you know, with the knowledge, and you need to feel safe.
Yeah.
It's millions of dollars that you're putting into, and it's great. Invest in a property because your money's going to be there. It's going to be safe. But, you know, make sure that you've done your research onto it, because if you haven't got someone who's looking after your property without knowledge, you could actually be at a financial loss.
Quick fire round, Tony, what do you love most about real estate?
Definitely being part of a journey. No one wakes up one morning and thinks, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll ring a real estate agent about selling my house. There's usually, or no, not usually, there's always something significant happening in someone's life when they make a decision to sell. Upsizing, downsizing, going to a retirement village, death, divorce, whatever it might be, relocating. You can be part of that journey and really help someone move from a place in their life to where they're needing to go to, and that's very rewarding.
Dan, three tips for a landlord coming into winter. What should they do to look after their property?
First thing is to make sure that your drainage system is sufficient for your property, especially with recent flooding. Clean the gutters absolutely, that's the top of your list. Make sure that if you've got trees or that it's going to heavily drop, make sure that they've been trimmed back before the weather kicks in.
Brilliant. There's so many things I could ask these guys. I can tell there's a wealth of knowledge in the room. To find out more, head to barfoot.co.nz/teatre2 and you will get all the details for Tony and Dan. Thanks so much for coming in on a Monday afternoon. I hope the drive home isn't too bad.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen.
Thanks for tuning in. Remember, you can listen to all our past episodes up on Spotify, Apple and Samsung podcasts. We're up on YouTube, iHeartRadio, and pretty much anywhere you like to listen to them. If you've got any questions, email us at propertymatters@barfoot.co.nz. Have a fabulous week. Drive safe. See you next week.